And our special guest tonight, Dr. Mona Lisa Schultz, as we talk about intuition, her works, of course, number of books, including All Is Well, The Intuitive Advisor, Awakening Intuition, The New Feminine Brain as well. You'll find it all on her website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we will be back in a moment with her on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Schultz, let's get back to how you got involved in all of this, and then we'll start talking about intuition in today's day. So you were doing all this, these things were happening to you. Go ahead, I'll let you continue with your story.
So I said to the intuitive that I went to see on how to get awake, I said, so if you tell me that my brain spells are because I'm not using my intuition, so how do I do that? She said, I don't know. Lovely. I get back on the bus and I go back to Boston. And essentially, I went to a bookstore on Newbury Street, and you know how you look for books. I looked on the shelf, and there was a book called You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. And there are affirmations. So I figured maybe the affirmations will help unfreeze my brain. So basically, like reps in a gym, I did the affirmations. One, 10 times a day, three of them at a time. And then over the course of that, about 8 months, my spells got better and better. And within 2 years, I started medical school. And interesting enough, now I'm starting a book. I'm writing a book called All Is Well with Louise Hay. That's on awesome. How to heal your life with affirmations, intuition, and medicine. It's interesting how things come around.
That's right.
Nonetheless, I start medical school. I start my MD-PhD program. I do 3 years of medicine. 3 years of my PhD, and now I have to go to the floor of the hospital and start my clerkship. And they give me the name and the age of someone, and they say, go down to the emergency room and pick her up. Well, you know, as a medical student, you don't know anything. You hardly know how to use your stethoscope. You know how to use the equipment. You have a white coat with all these little books on them with lists. So I go in at Boston City Hospital. There's no help. They tell you nothing. I go down in the elevator in the toward the emergency room. I'm stuck behind a gurney, and Mary Brown, 48, pick her up. I just use that name all the time to protect confidentiality. Mm-hmm. I look up in toward the ceiling, and I see the picture in my mind's eye of this lady lying on a gurney, and I see in my mind's eye this woman screaming, "Doctor, doctor, it's my gallbladder," and I'm thinking, "Wow." In these green stretch pants, clutching the right part of her abdomen, screaming, "Doctor, doctor, it's my gallbladder." And in the elevator with my clipboard, I'm thinking, well, how would I work up someone if they did have a gallbladder problem?
Sure.
Are you there?
Yeah.
So I look up in these little books in my white coat. You know, they have lists. Well, you know, the books say you check the right upper quadrant ultrasound. I have to drag her down to radiology. So I put that on my clipboard. So I'm making this hypothetical workup on my clipboard. The books say, you know, you have to check the bilirubin. You have to check the sclera of their eyes to see if they're jaundiced. And so, you know, I'm just doing the drill so that if in the event that someday I see someone with a gallbladder problem, I'll know how to work them up. By the time I get down to the emergency room, I pull, you know, the sheet of the emergency gurney, and there's a lady screaming, "Doctor, doctor, it's my gallbladder," and she's a lime green stretch pants. I'm like, wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
And I had the, you know, the workup all arranged. And as a result of hypothetically having the workup all arranged, I was able to get out of the hospital faster than all the other medical students because they were there till 8 p.m. at night. I left at 4, and I was able to go home and actually read about gallbladder problems. The next day, I did the same thing again. It was a woman with bladder infection. And the third day, I can't remember what it was, but I did it 3 days in a row. And I'm like, wow, how do I do that? But I learned that I wasn't the only one that did that. In every shift, there was always a nurse. Whenever I was on call, there was always a nurse who's usually overweight and crabby, who always knew what patient was going to get sick and code. And so at the beginning of your shift on call, you always kind of look for that nurse who was kind of intuitive. And you'd say, Mary or Maurice, what do you think's going to happen tonight? And they'd act aggravated, but they'd be impressed that you knew to ask them.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, I think it's John in room 11B. And so you'd say, should I eat early or late? And they'd say, early, eat early. And then you'd ask them, well, what time should I be around with a code cart? And they'd say about 7. So you'd eat early, be, you know, around the code cart, and invariably that patient would code at 7.
And that's something.
They would always know. And so you would just kind of learn that there was all these people who were intuitive. They didn't say they were intuitive. But then, you know, around residency, I met somebody named Chris Northrup, and she worked in women's health. And I wanted nothing to do with intuition, actually. This was just some kind of little thing that you did to make you a better medical student.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be this academic neurologist, behavioral neurologist. And so I just wanted to match in the residency and then get the hell out of there. You got to understand, this was nothing. I didn't want to do any woo-woo stuff. Well, what happened was, I matched. I woke up one morning, couldn't feel my hands. A spine that I had fused when I was 12, I have scoliosis. I know, I have a lot of health issues. I woke up and the discs above the fusion, the Harrington rod, started falling apart. They fell out. And I had an MRI, and the doctor's like, we want to do a fusion in the next week. And I'm like, no. So I took 10 weeks, and I went to Maine, and I started working on Chris Northrup's book, and I started doing medical intuition to pay off my student loans. And I couldn't go into neurology because I couldn't stand up. So the only residency I could do at that time was something you could do that was sitting down, and that was, unfortunately, psychiatry. So I did psychiatry for a year and a half, but I hated it. I wanted neurology again. I applied again because I wanted, remember now, nothing to do with intuition.
Right.
I applied again, got in, and then 2 more discs fell out, and that was it. It's like God has spoken. No neurology for you. And at that point, Oprah Winfrey had heard about what I did. I got on the Oprah Winfrey show, did a reading, and then I got a book contract, and it was like, that was what I was supposed to do. So I do, part of my career, I do neuropsychiatry, and I treat people with head injury, stroke, dementia, autism, mental retardation, and those are patients, and they get diagnoses. And then the other part of my career has nothing to do with medicine at all, and that's medical intuition.
Did Oprah get what you did at that time?
George, you're very sweet, and you're very intuitive, and it's you zoom right into the issue. Incidentally, just because we love you so much, anybody who, I just got an email from my marketer. Anybody who goes to my website and types in, I love George Norrie, gets a discount in any one of my classes. So, but anyway, at the time, years and years and years ago, this was before Oprah was into any of this. This was in 1991, and believe it or not, it was 4th of July, now that I think about it.
How about that?
And, I did it because I knew that someday it was a high-risk thing to go on the Oprah show and to do a reading where I was behind one camera in one room and the client was behind another camera in another room. And I was given only the name and the age. Number one, you could be wrong on international TV,
right,
and look like an idiot. Or number two, it could be a hatchet job and you could be an idiot.
Yep.
But either way, I hadn't finished my training yet. But if I chose not to do it, I knew that I'd be in some nursing home someday, rocking, saying, I could have been on the Oprah show. I could have been on the Oprah show, but I chose not to do it because I was afraid I wouldn't finish my medical school. So I knew that I had to do this because, number one, I wanted to meet Oprah. So I did it, and I nailed the reading. But I remember walking out on stage, and I thought, oh, she's just going to be this really sweet lady. But the first thing she said was, we have a hard time believing you can do this. And I went, oh, my God, I can't believe this. I want to get out of here.
Please, yeah.
But then after, she warmed up because I basically said you wouldn't be where you are if you didn't have a very strong intuition, a gut sense. And she said she's absolutely right because she doesn't do anything that isn't based on a gut sense.
Yeah,
she wouldn't be where she is. And this was back in 91. So we've gone a long way.
We sure have.
OWN Network has gone a long way. So that's how I basically have done my career, and I've been very lucky. I've had some of the best mentors, but I've been doing it since 1987, and that's over 25 years.
Has it changed your life in terms of your personality, who you are?
Well, actually, it has. Well, it's also saved my life, changed my life, saved my life. In 2005, the other thing about people who are professionally medical intuitive is they tend to have a lot of health problems. I guess because you've got to learn what you teach, or you've got to teach best what you learn. I don't know how you do that. In 2005, I had a lump in my left breast, and I didn't think anything of it because, you know, you're a medical student. You see the cyst on an ultrasound, and you're like, this is nothing. Right. So, but I had a biopsy, and I also had one in my right breast. And I was in a really bad relationship at the time. So, you know, we don't want to listen to our intuition. You can't be really intuitive for yourself all the time. So I was on my way to a Dolly Parton concert. Dolly Parton is the symbol for breasts in the United States, perhaps the world.
You got that.
And so I get a call from my doctor, my breast doctor. And she says, you got to come in. And I'm like, you know what? I don't have time for this. I got to go see Dolly Parton. She says, no, you have to come in right now. And I said, why?
I hate those calls.
Wait, just wait. It comes out good. Don't worry about
All
it.
Right.
I get a new rack out of it. So, and she says, I hate to tell you this over the phone. You have breast cancer. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. So, you know, all time stops. So
sure
I get a lumpectomy in my left breast because that one was invasive. But because I knew that I was in a really bad relationship, I knew the right breast would be invasive. Now this is really, you got to listen to this really close. So, but the right breast biopsied negative. I go to Boston at Harvard, and because there were negative, the margins weren't clean, they want to go in and do another lumpectomy. I said, no, I want a double mastectomy. And they said, why? And I said, because I know that the lump in the right breast will end up being invasive. She argued with me. And she said, because of the kind of invasive cancer in your left breast, it is within the scope of correct treatment to have a double mastectomy.
Yeah.
So we will do it for you. But you don't have cancer in your right breast. I said, okay. We did a mammogram on the right breast.
And she was opposed to it. Okay.
She said, but it makes sense medically. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done it. It's not like they're going to amputate your right leg because you think you have cancer in your right leg. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
But it was because it was one of the choices of the correct treatment, she agreed to do it, okay? So she does a double mastectomy, and the right mammogram, remember the right breast was negative. There was nothing there.
They send the
right breast to pathology. Guess what's there?
Oh, you've got cancer there.
I had invasive cancer in that breast.
Yeah. She must have been
shocked. Because of that hunch, it saved my life. The doctor comes back with the path report, and she's like, she can't believe it. She said, how did you know? And she said, you saved your life.
That is something.
So when you say, how has intuition changed my life? How has intuition saved my life?
What a remarkable story, Mona Lisa.
So, you know, the point of that story is that you have to take intuition and you really have to listen to it. But the other point is you have to use it in partnership with a doctor that you really trust. In a partnership that you really care about.
And they have to understand this. They have to understand it.
And then if you get a hunch and the doctor says there's nothing there, you know, get a second and a third opinion, but then watch it.
See, I'm convinced all of us need to take care of ourselves beyond our doctor relationship. You know, they try to do the best they can, but nobody knows your body better than you.
You have to. Everybody does the best they can. Now, understand, I'm a physician, I'm a patient, and I am a scientist. I am convinced that physicians, all of them, do the best they can. We just do the best we can. Who would not want to do the best they could?
And some are better than others.
That's right. I understand that. But really, I have been blessed with the best doctors.
What for you? As you've taught people, you've worked with people, not the incredible story about yourself, but what has been for you maybe one of the most satisfying emotional stories that you've ever gone through because of what you do? Is there anything out there? Have you touched a life? Have you witnessed something outside of you? Your story is going to be hard to top, but what's out there?
Well, some difficult ones that have made me want to, you know, one of the struggles that I think we all have is that we get intuition about each other's lives. And we have a responsibility to deliver the information to the best of our ability and then release the outcome. And when I do readings, I give information and you never know if you're having a good enough effect. And then if you don't think that you can help a person or save a person, you feel bad. I think everybody has that. A mother who sees her daughter going out with the wrong guy and then the bad result is what I'm talking about. Or a husband who tries to make the right investment, gets an intuitive feeling, and then just knows it's the wrong thing. It's like you're trying to make your intuition do the right thing, but you know you can't
force it.
Right. I had a reading with a lady. I saw her as married to someone where the money was going down the drain. The money was constantly going down the drain, and she was working.
Yeah.
And she said that her husband was retired, and he was a day trader, which meant he was not working on the computer, essentially doing day stocks, which
day
is like
stuff.
Actually
getting in, getting out, like penny stocks.
Yes, but things. In a way, it was gambling.
It is.
He was really gambling.
Yeah.
And he had lost a lot of their retirement. And she was working all day long. And I said, I'm telling you, this is an issue, and I have concern over your left breast. And she said, well, they're watching an area there, but there is really no problem. I said, I'm telling you, I'm worried because you're like your husband's mother. And you're feeding the money there, and the money's going down the drain. Well, a year and a half later, somebody signs up for a reading, and it's almost an identical reading, and I don't keep track. And the woman says, yep, you're right. I have an issue with my left breast. And yep, there is an issue with my husband with money. Now what do I do? You're right. You told me the same thing a year and a half ago, and I didn't listen. And now I have invasive cancer. And I felt sick to my stomach because I felt that I hadn't tried hard enough. And I felt I could have prevented it. But that's my point, is that all of us every day get intuition and get a bad feeling about somebody, a loved one's life. And we think that we can prevent a bad thing from happening, but we can't. And that's what I call psychic sickness, is that you can't. You get sick to your stomach because you try to help stop something bad from happening, but you can't. And my way of explaining it, and I'm not real good at it, is if you got in your mail somebody else's Visa bill, you just literally forward it to them, but you wouldn't pay it. You get the message, but you wouldn't take responsibility for it. And that's the same with getting a bad feeling about someone else's life. But you feel compelled. A lot of people, to prevent it, a lot of people talk about before 9/11 happened, that they had a feeling that was going to happen, and they feel bad that they didn't prevent it.
Well, and some people didn't know what it was.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But just because you get an intuitive message doesn't necessarily mean that it's your responsibility to prevent it. That's my point. And that's where 12-step stuff comes in, is that people have a higher power, and you ain't it.
All right, stay with us. We're gonna take this break, Mona Lisa. We're going to come back with more as we get into intuition on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls with Mona Lisa Schultz, your stories of intuition and questions for her as well. When we come back, we'll find out more about intuition on Coast to Coast AM. Mona Lisa, you talk a lot about intuition back in the 1700s and you equate it with today. How come you go back that far?
Because, well, isn't today the 4th of July?
Yes, it is. Ah, that's it, huh? Very good tie-in. I should have figured that out.
I mean, you people are the historians. I'm not, but isn't there stuff with the 4th of July today?
Yeah, it's called Independence Day.
Right. And so Independence Day, the fact that people had to live with a lot less technological information. And so they had to make decisions with insufficient information, which is my definition of intuition. Actually, it's not my definition. It's Antonio Damasio's in University of Iowa. But now that we have so much information, you have to use intuition, because when you have an overabundance of information, you don't know what information to choose, what's most important, how to prioritize it. And ultimately, you have to combine information with intuition to make a correct decision.
Do you think intuition at that time, even in the beginning, was a God-given sense for us? That
because the area in the brain for intuition, which is next to the area for decision-making, incidentally, is near the area for spirituality, which is why a lot of people confuse intuition with spirituality. They're actually very near each other in the brain. So, yes, actually, it is. It's some people think it's the voice of the divine. Exactly.
Intuition, I'm convinced, can be used in business, as you are, relationships, your health, of course. It's really a remarkable gift, isn't it?
Well, I think it's something that all of us have. I don't think we all verbalize. I think that it's not... it's almost like it's your sense of smell. You may not always be aware of it, but it's always there. You definitely know, or your sense of taste. It's not always, you're not always aware of it, but you definitely know when it's missing.
How do you convince someone to use this gift for their own betterment?
Oh, I don't convince people.
You won't do it.
Because you don't. It's like trying to force a person to have an orgasm. It doesn't work. You don't force a person to do something that's a limbic-based skill in the brain. You just suggest it. You allow it's there, and you say, you know what, this might help you. But some people who are skeptics, a skeptic is someone who's not open to learn. A skeptic is someone who gets satisfaction and joy from knocking down. So I'm not going to sit there and give a person who gets joy from knocking something down more joy. I just won't even talk to them.
Let's use these various categories. Let me throw them out and tell me how you think they could be used in these different situations. Let's talk about business, first of all, because I think a lot of people are stressed out about the economy still. How can you use that to better your own situation?
How can you use, I'm sorry, say that again?
In business,
it's well known that there's literature. This is in the book Awakening Intuition. I wrote another book called The Intuitive Advisor, but the first book I wrote called Awakening Intuition, the first chapter shows intuition used in all the different professions. Business, a lot of people who do stocks, picking stocks, trends, always get that extra hunch. But they also do all the detailed work, looking at the economics. But once again, you have to have that gut hunch of what's that next step. So economics, looking at the trends, looking at what stocks. But you're looking at an area that I'm awful at, so I have no idea. But they it's obvious that people, when I grew up, that there was this Mr. Cager, who we used to always go see, and he would always know what areas in town the land was going to go up in valuation. That's the other area. What areas are going to go up in valuation? Property values.
He was a good speculator.
That's it. Speculation is the word. What's speculation? Intuition.
Relationships.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite is matchmaking. Ultimately, you can get details about someone's life. But then there is this little spark, S-B-A-R-K, I'm originally from Rhode Island, that you can't really, this nuance, that you can't really put your name on. That's intuition. The best matchmakers, I always watch these matchmaking shows, and I do a little bit of it on the phone myself. I watch these matchmaking shows, and I've always seen that they use a little bit of intuition, the Millionaire Matchmaker and others. They always have this kind of second or third or fifth sense that you can see that they're adding on top of the criteria that they got about the people that they're choosing.
I've got a friend, she's the numbers lady, and she picked her husband by his astrological numbers and how they matched with hers. And they're still married and very happy. It works.
She only has one husband?
She only has one. How many?
Very good.
How many should she have?
No, I know.
You make it sound like she should have three or four going
no,
at the same time.
No, I think that that's great. I think that that's great. Astrology is absolutely fabulous, and I've read about medical astrology. It's very interesting. There's a whole body of literature about why medical astrology works, that schizophrenics are born more under one month or conceived under 1 month, and it's because maybe more viruses or during that time or something. No one really knows, but there's a reason why medical astrology has scientific underpinning.
Well, she's a numerologist, so you two should get together. You know, you might be able to come up with something that really, really works here.
Fascinating. You know, people, absolutely fascinating.
And that's another thing. I think people like to be matched up the right way. And
Well, there's a whole thing about temperament and the brain. And this whole concept of Mars and Jupiter and Saturn and Uranus and how that formulates temperament. I did a lot of studies with the natal chart and temperament and the aspects. And if you look at psychiatry and astrology, you'll see that a lot of the natal chart with aspects is very, very interesting. A lot of mass murderers are born with Pluto and Mars aspects. Did you know that?
I did not.
It's very interesting because it has to do with Mars as a violence, but it also is charisma, depending on how you use it. So,
who's more intuitive, a man or a woman?
Does
it matter?
Stop. They're both intuitive. It has to do with who verbalizes it more. You see, a traditional woman has more connections with the right brain, intuition, and the left with words, so she's going to talk about it more. But a man has intuition. A traditional man, he may just not talk about it. He'll act on it more. So both of them have intuition, but one just talks about it more.
Do successful people have a higher intuitive power?
Successful people may have learned how to access it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that unsuccessful people have yet to tap into it.
Or recognize it.
I think that everybody can learn to be intuitive. Everybody who can learn how to access it, just like, I mean, I listen to your commercials, the Rosetta Stone, hello. Isn't the Rosetta Stone some kind of intuitive device?
Yes.
I don't know much about it, but all I know is I bought a Rosetta Stone for somebody, and it's how do you learn a language in a very fast way? Well, intuition is just another language. How do you learn it in a very fast way? You obviously have a capacity. Everybody can sing. You can take singing lessons. Not everybody can be a Beverly Sills or a Barbara Streisand, but everybody can be taught to sing with lessons. That's why everybody wants to be American Idol. They all want to go there and learn how to sing. So everybody can learn to be intuitive, and you can take intuition lessons.
See, I think a lot of people who are intuitive don't want to recognize it. They want to fight it. They might not like the answer, so they try to go against the grain. And they probably always get the short end of the stick because they always say to themselves then, I knew it, I shouldn't have, as I mentioned. But I think a lot of people, given the fact that, you know, they have the ability to see the future that they may not like, they probably won't go down that road. And maybe they should.
Well, this is an interesting story.
Yeah.
At Bethesdale Hospital in the neurology wing, there was a guy who had epilepsy. And as I said, epileptics, especially in this area, for intuition and mysticism, have more intuition, intuitive events. So in the middle of the night, this guy sits up, and he has all the EEG wiring on him, and he stands in the middle of the seizure, after a seizure, he sits up, and he says to the nurse, and they record this on the chart, my father just died. So he has a seizure, and then he has an intuitive event in this area of the brain for intuition. So the nurse writes, patient sits up, and patient states, father just died. So the next morning, they find out that the patient's father indeed died of a car accident. Okay?
Yep.
So they present this to the head attending, the head physician, who is very skeptical and, you know, doesn't believe in the future. You can nail the future before it happens. Are you following me?
I'm with you.
So my friend, the neuropsychologist there, says, Dr. X, what do you think about the fact that this patient stood up in the middle of a seizure, had an intuitive event, and said, my father just died? And you know what the doctor said? The doctor said, since it's impossible to know the future before it happens, that event couldn't possibly have happened.
See, that doctor's so rigid. So rigid.
No, that doctor is actually a very brilliant person. He's just saying, I can't fit that into my brain because it doesn't make sense to me. And I understand that. What he's saying is, I can't handle that piece of data. It messes me up.
Right.
And that's, to be honest with you, that's an honest statement. I don't have a problem with that. Because he's just basically saying, I can't handle that. Good.
Yeah, but is he saying the guy is not right?
He didn't say that. He just said, he's just saying it can't happen. He's not saying the guy's a nut. I like the way he's rejecting it for his brain. I'm just hoping that that's what he's saying. From my perspective, I think it's a cool story. Because everyone in their lives has stories like that where they see an intuitive event, they have proof that it's an intuitive event, intraconvertible proof, and then they show it to someone and they go, nope, didn't happen. You sit right there and you look at it.
He should be more open-minded, though, I think.
You know what? Woulda, coulda, shoulda. I have a sign in my house, woulda, coulda, shoulda, and I should have been 5'8". Okay? I should have been 5'8", but my spine was fused and I'm 5'3". Woulda, coulda, shoulda. It is what it is. The only path out of suffering is accepting what is. People are not going to always accept your intuition. That's the problem with why people don't accept their intuition, because they think people are going to think they're nuts.
That's
and the
true.
Answer is, you're right, they are. So don't tell everybody.
Don't tell anyone.
No, don't tell everybody. I didn't say anybody. I said everybody.
You were saying earlier that if, you know, you were giving a reading to somebody and you really thought that they were in serious shape, that you're going to be truthful with them. How many people aren't? How many people don't want to tell someone negative news?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. People don't want to hear it. And so you, over the course of 25 years, I've figured out ways. First of all, in the first 2.5 minutes, I say, does this make sense to you in the reading? If it doesn't, I end the reading and I return the money in full.
See,
because
but I don't...
It means either A, I can't read them, or B, they don't want to hear it. If they don't want to hear it, I'm not going to sit there and play tug of war for an hour.
Well, if they don't want to hear it, they shouldn't even be with you.
I know, but the point of the matter is, it either works or it doesn't. But you learn to say things in a way that is from that person's point of view. Yesterday I bought a PlayStation 3. That may surprise you, given that I have an MD and a PhD. But
no.
The reason why I bought a PlayStation 3 is because there's a game called Mini Ninjas where you can change yourself into an animal and walk around like an animal and see the world.
And that's what you want to do.
No, I want to learn how to see the world from somebody else's point of view so that it can help me when I do a reading.
That's fascinating.
Describe something so that they can understand it better.
Have you hooked it up yet?
What?
Did you hook it up yet?
Oh, yeah. I hooked it up in 5 seconds. I was really excited. So it means that even more I have an adolescent boy's brain. But my point is, I'll give you, you asked me some other readings, some really interesting readings, is I did a reading on somebody, and you should know right away when I say somebody, that should tell you something. This woman calls me up for a reading. When I do this reading, and I look at her, I say, it's like you look in the mirror one day, and it's like your face shatters. I don't understand it. You go to the mirror one day, and your face just shatters. And then it's like I see all these red marks on your face. Then I go through the rest of her body, and it's hormonally changed. I couldn't figure out what this was. This is somebody who was a transsexual.
I was just going to say that.
See, you knew this. Yeah. I don't know why you even bother. You don't sign up for any of my intuition classes because you'll embarrass me because you're too good.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is somebody who was a famous model, female model, but was really a transsexual, used to be a man. Was on all kinds, had all kinds of silicone implants in her face. And then one day, for whatever reason, her body rejected them, and the silicone in her face fell.
Ugh.
And so that was the thing with her face. And so all of it, so her face completely got messed up. And so she got so traumatized that she let all of her hormones go. And so as a result, her gender issues were messed up. That was an interesting reading.
That is a great reading.
Another person, another man, calls me up, and these are embarrassing readings. It's so strange because you don't know. I teach people to describe. I teach them when I'm teaching them how to do readings. Describe what you see. Don't judge. Don't diagnose. Mm-hmm. In fact, everybody signs a consent form when they take a class that says that they will not use it for diagnosis. They're not a mini physician.
Right.
You want to be a physician? Go to medical school.
That's right. That's smart.
So. This person calls me on the phone, and I said, I go through his body, and I'm always uncomfortable reading men because, you know, this isn't a sex call.
Right.
So
you're not a 1-900 call.
I know. It's not that. I get to his pelvis, and I see this red ring, and it's the strangest thing. So you can't say, I just say, I see a red ring in your pelvis, and the guy gets uncomfortable. I say, can you please tell me your health concerns? And he laughs, and he tells me that he puts on a condom, a latex condom, and he has an allergic reaction, and so he gets this red ring around his penis, and that's his medical problem. Silence.
I'm glad you're a doctor.
I love the way you said it. Silence. You asked me for reading, and so my point is that these are I think that this is, you know, it's obvious that what you're reading is what they have. And then you describe the emotional situation that was going on around that physical event.
If you sensed someone was going to die, would you tell them?
Oh, my God. See, no wonder you do this show. You're like reading me. There was another reading I did, and I didn't know if I was going to say this to you or not, is a famous actor. I hate doing actors. I hate doing famous people. And the reason why I hate doing famous people is because you've read about their lives in People magazine, so you know all about them.
Sure.
And I like to not do readings on anybody I know other than their name and their age. I like to do it completely blind. But this person is a famous actor, and I didn't know who he was. I just got this name and this age of person, and they call it blind. I found out he was famous later on, after, of course, he died. But anyway, so this person calls, and they sign the consent form. So I get to the person's heart, and I hear this tick, 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 tick. So I said, there's something different about the electrical system in your heart. Do you have a heart arrhythmia or a heart rhythm problem? And he says, no, there's nothing wrong with my heart. So I feel really uncomfortable, and I feel that I've messed up the reading. You know how you feel like you've messed up?
Oh, yeah, and you're kicking yourself saying, I'm not wrong. I know I'm not
I don't have that much self-esteem. I think I'm wrong. So I said, well, I think you should get your heart checked, which was within the normal limits. The guy was like 60-something. So I talk about his career. It felt like he was estranged from the rest of his vocational group. And
Let's continue the story when we come back. Plus, we'll take your intuitive phone calls with Dr. Mona Lisa Schultz on Coast to Coast AM.